Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's the Scott Horton Show. I'm your host, Scott Horton, filling in for Scott Horton. Wait, well, same difference. Anyway, so this is my radio show. Michael Meharry's going to be on the show today from the 10th Amendment Center to talk, I guess, mostly about Nullify NSA. It's the hottest new fad that's sweeping the nation. Nullify NSA. It's like that pop star you all care so much about. No, really, everyone else cares so much about it that you should care about it too in order to belong and fit in and feel like you're part of the group. Yeah, come on, we're nullifying the NSA. It's the latest, greatest thing since whichever favorite reality show that you like so much. Right? Yeah. So, that's good. Let me be talking with Michael Meharry about the Nullify NSA movement and its important to importance to the future of freedom in America. All right. That should be good. And then also we'll be talking to, I don't know, man, I sent a lot of invites out. I didn't seem to get a whole bunch of responses back. I got a couple of no's. Go ahead and give credit to those who knowed me. But that's all right, because I got so much news that I couldn't possibly get to it by the end of the show. Because after all, I've only got 2 hours, 8 segments per hour. Wait, make that 4. 8 segments total, 2 of whom go to the guest. And so, there's a lot going on. There's always a lot going on, but right now, it's a lot. I better shut up. I mean, I better start talking now and get right to it. First and foremost, in no particular order, really, but, well, I mean, I'm trying to keep importance at the top. This is actually not the most important thing, but it's very important. I'll just get it out of the way real quick. And that is Egypt government resigns, paving way for Sisi to seek presidency. So this is not quite the fall of the state. This is the military dictatorship preparing to wrangle a civilian suit for its military dictator. It's the exact same, program as during the era of Hosni Mubarak. You might remember, I always call them General Mubarak because he really was. But they just called him president and put him in a suit. But still, he was just the military dictator the whole time. So, anyway. That's what Sisi's doing here. Reuters says Egypt's government resigned on Monday, paving the way for Army Chief Field Marshal Abdel Fattah al-Sisi to declare his candidacy for president of a strategic U.S. ally gripped by political strife. After the July overthrow of elected Islamist President Mohamed Morsi and subsequent crackdowns on Islamists and liberals, with hundreds killed and thousands jailed, critics say Cairo's military-backed authorities are turning the clock back to the era of autocrat Hosni Mubarak, when the political elite ruled with an iron fist in alliance with top businessmen. The outgoing government made every effort to get Egypt out of the narrow tunnel in terms of security, economic pressures, and political confusion, Prime Minister Hazem el-Belawi said in a live nationwide speech. Belawi, who was tasked by interim president Adli Mansour with running the government's affairs until the election, did not give a clear reason for the decision, but it effectively opened the way for Sisi to run for president, since he would have to first leave his post as defense minister. This government resignation was done as a step that was needed ahead of Sisi's announcement that he will run for president, an Egyptian official said. He told Reuters the cabinet had resigned en masse and Sisi did not want to appear to be acting alone. Yeah, in other words, this is the little stage-managed thing where the military dictator of Egypt puts on a suit and stands for a rigged election. You know, the Constitution just got passed by a 98% super-duper-looper majority. It's the kind of thing that everybody cracks up laughing when Saddam Hussein announces his election results along those kind of numbers. Oh, but in Egypt, yeah, we like the military dictatorship there, you know, because that's what Israel wants. And that's what the empire wants, too. So, anyway. Yeah, poor Egyptians. It's funny, all the different theories about what went on there. I'm not saying that I speak Arabic and that I'm the world's greatest historian of our current era or anything like that, but it is kind of funny to me how wrong people get it. I see people who think that the whole thing was engineered by America in the first place just to put the Muslim Brotherhood in power. And not just right-wing birther idiots believe that, but other people believe that too. And yet if you go back to 2011, you can see how this whole thing was organic. What started in Tunisia was really the results of Chelsea Manning's heroic leak of the State Department cables, which detailed the corruption of the Ben Ali dictatorship there in Tunisia. And then this poor desperate young man burned himself to death after suffering oppression at the hands of the local authorities. He couldn't take it anymore. He set himself on fire because they wouldn't give him a license to have a little fruit stand, which they had taken from him for operating without a license. It's like the dictatorship of the Democrats there in Tunisia, it sounds like. So that sparked a nationwide protest movement that led to Ben Ali fleeing for his life. And then the Egyptian people said, wow, yeah, we want to do that too, overthrow our American-backed dictator. And so outside they went to do just that. And it's true that the April 5th movement that the Americans had been attempting to groom were out there helping to lead the protests and all of that. But there were millions of people joining them. Millions. And it was a left-right popular consensus of everyone in Egypt who is not a military dictator, who is not an officer or a fascist, quote-unquote, businessman on the take. Everyone else supported the revolution. It was a real revolution. But then what happened was the left and the right split, and the right wing won the election. And then that's the Muslim Brotherhood. And they're not really Al-Qaeda radicals as much as the American Al-Qaeda radicals. The right-wing radicals in America like to paint them as right-wing radicals. They're really more, and they're crazy or whatever, but just in the same way as all conservatives are crazy. But they're conservatives, and they were professionals, like kind of upper-middle-class types, not the ruling officer corps. But upper-middle-class businessmen and professionals, accountants and doctors and lawyers and people like that in the Muslim Brotherhood, at least then. It may be all young and angry now, but that's only because what happened was the liberals ended up siding with the Americans, really, the military dictatorship, and they canceled the election. And last summer, the liberals all came out like the perfect stooges and put on what was really, in effect, a pale imitation of the original protests against the dictatorship in 2011. But it was just enough for Sisi to go on TV and say, oh, I have to prevent a civil war by arresting Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood and driving them out of power. Because that's what America wants. And what's hilarious is to see the Egyptian government the whole time pretending, oh, the Americans are out to get us. Oh, the Americans wanted the Muslim Brotherhood. Oh, it's a American plot to foist the Muslim Brotherhood on us and whatever. Yeah, right. If this was 40 years ago when the problem was Nasser. But right now, America's perfectly happy with military dictatorship in the Middle East. And that's the way, especially in Egypt. No, I didn't mean to say Middle East in general. Because in Syria, where we don't control the dictatorship, our government prefers revolution. So it's not a matter of preferring dictatorship to revolution. It's a matter of preferring American control versus not, you know, or at least chaos to a lack of American control, as in the case of Libya and Syria, it looks like. But anyway, so that's the deal. America tried to hang on to Mubarak as long as they possibly could back in January and February of 2011. And then after they admitted that, okay, he's got to go, his family friend, Hillary Clinton's family friend, Hosni Mubarak, her words, then they decided, well, they wanted Omar Suleiman, the head of the secret torture police, who had worked with George W. Bush on the torture rendition program for all those years. But the people of Egypt won and said no to that. And they held elections. They held parliamentary elections and presidential elections. both of which were won handily by the Muslim Brotherhood. And in fact, Morsi was the third or fourth string candidate of the Muslim Brotherhood. He was not their leader by any stretch, but the courts, working for the military, had prevented their best guys from running. So, and I'm not trying to really defend the Muslim Brotherhood's exercise of authority. I don't even really believe in democracy, but compared to dictatorship, they were the elected group, and the liberals clearly blew it by siding with dictatorship and bogus elections versus a real democratic give and take where they could have had a left-right split and kept it going. Hey, all Scott Horton here. Don't you want a bust of Murray Rothbard for your desk at work? A Ludwig von Mises for your bookshelf at home? A Harry Brown, a Ron Paul as a gift for a friend? Check out these awesome busts of your libertarian heroes at myheroesthink.com. They come in 6 or 9 inch sizes, and now in color, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf in my office, and I love it. Just click the banner ad in the right margin at scotthorton.org and enter promo code ScottHortonShow to save $5. That's myheroesthink.com. Man, you need some new stickers for the back of your truck. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. Aren't you sick and tired of everyone else being wrong about everything all the time? Well, now you can tell them all what's right with some stickers from LibertyStickers.com. At LibertyStickers.com, they're against everything, so you know they're good on your issue, too. Whether it's the wars, police state, gun laws, the left and right, or the president, LibertyStickers.com has hundreds of choices so you can find just the right words to express your opposition and contempt for those who would violate your rights. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, guys, welcome back to the thing here. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be talking with Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center about the Nullify NSA movement. By the way, check out the chat room. You can join up the chat room during the show if you like chat rooms during shows. It's scotthorton.org/chat. scotthorton.org/chat. Got a few people hanging out in there. Stop by. Say hi. And then, yeah, scotthorton.org, you can find all my archives and everything else, the Listen Live page, and a collection of documentaries I'd like you to take a look at if you want, whatever you want there. Lots of stuff. 3,000 interviews going back to 2003 there at scotthorton.org. And also, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. Okay, good. All right, now Ukraine. Man, I guess, you know what? I didn't really, you know, sketch all this out in a great speech outline or anything like that. But I think I want to frame my talk about Ukraine today within the context of American media coverage. And, you know, if you actually Google around, you can find some pretty good stuff and some pretty good context in writing, even at places like, what was it, Time.com or something like that. There's a few mainstream media outlets that had, you know, a little bit of context, fair enough. You know, not outright lies and stuff, you know, not too agenda-driven, just here's a little bit of what's really going on. But man, on TV, just forget about it. Oh, the Republican said, the Democrat said, here's all you need to know about Ukraine. And each one of these idiots, it never ceases to amaze me, even though I've seen it a million times over again. But it's still, it just never ceases to amaze me, the look on the faces of the TV anchors reading their lines when it's the kind of stuff that could lead us straight into a world war, you know? Or it's the kind of stuff where you know that they don't know what they're talking about. They don't know if this stuff is true. They don't care if it's true. If it occurs to them at all, they just squinch it down. Their job, you know, like a man with his feelings, they just ignore it. They just roll right ahead like it's not real. Their job is to read the words on the teleprompter. Yes, the people of Ukraine must have a chance to embrace Western values. Yeah, like which ones? Democracy? Because the guy that was just forced out in a coup d'etat was the democratically elected leader of the country, who actually whooped the ass of his closest contenders. I mean, he won with a plurality, but it was right at, you know, almost 50-50 kind of split. But he was way ahead of everybody else for their numbers. I don't think democracy is perfect. I don't think whoever is democratically elected, therefore, has the right to do whatever they want with the minority, etc., like that. But that doesn't really seem to be what's going on here. More than anything, this is a proxy war between the United States and Russia. which makes everybody on all sides of the situation in Ukraine useful dupes at worst and, you know, helpless victims at best. Because there are great powers who are interested in how things go in their country that they don't have the power to resist one way or the other. But to see, Dick Durbin, I saw, it was great. I watched the local news last night. It's so great to see the local news. It's been way too long. I mean, years probably since I watched the local Fox 7 news here in Austin. It's really nice, especially to see, you know, their canned international news that they distribute for their local affiliates to run and stuff. It was a lot of fun. It included a soundbite of Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin, saying, hey, listen, you know, Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, on TV, telling the Russians it would be a grave mistake were they to intervene militarily in an attempt to prop up the government there. And then followed by, and no question about, or to intervene at all. And then that was Dick Durbin, his soundbite, echoed that the Russians better not intervene here, and try to deny the people of Ukraine the chance to embrace Western values. That's what he said. Embrace Western values. Again, this is a spokesman for the Empire, which just mounted a successful coup d'etat in this country, toppling their democratically elected government in favor of one that embraces Western power, maybe. And then take a look at who these guys are that the U.S. is using, has used, to mount this coup. I will point you towards Justin Raimondo today at antiwar.com has a great piece, Coup in Kiev. It's really worth your time to take a look at. And then also our friend Max Blumenthal over at Alternate has a great piece too. Is the U.S. backing neo-Nazis in Ukraine? And the answer is yes. You know, it's like the American, so-called conservative right likes to pretend the Muslim Brotherhood are the radical right of Egypt rather than the conservatives. Well, these guys, I guess in America, the Americans are trying to pretend these are the liberals, the pro-Western leaning factions. I don't know if anybody's going to try to call their right-wingers conservatives. I mean, they're clearly right-wing, radical, racist nationalists, complete with lightning, SS lightning, and iron crosses, and Nazi salutes, and swastikas. And these symbols have been seen all over the place in what's called the Maidan, which is their central square there in Kiev. And today, and this may be an overreaction, but I don't know, man. There have been attacks. A Ukrainian synagogue was hit by firebombs. No injuries, but extensive damage. Reports, I don't know, the Times of Israel. So maybe this is completely made up. I don't think so, though. But then there was also an attack on, I believe, a Jewish school or something in Ukraine, leading the top, I believe it was two separate attacks. I could be wrong about that. But the, they're saying the top Ukrainian rabbi. I don't know exactly how they rank them. But a very prominent Ukrainian rabbi, at least, has urged all Ukrainian Jews to leave the country, to evacuate the country. Now, that may be a little bit of an overreaction. I hate to think that the Jewish minority there is really in that precarious of a position. It's happened before. But that goes to show you at least the fear that they're living in, that you have the U.S. and the EU and the UN intervening to help a coup that's at least backed by the Nazis. I don't think the leaders of it are Nazis. But then again, you know, Yulia Tymoshenko, who was released from prison, who was in there for supposedly allying with Putin, according to her old friends. But anyway, or I don't know exactly how that broke down. But anyway, she's back out. And I read a thing, which granted it was in the New Republic, but it had quotes from her former aide saying she literally, not figuratively, she literally believes she is the reincarnation of Eva Peron. And then they talk all, it was funny too, because they talk all about the, like the media professionals who helped her, you know, shape her image. And so they talked about how, like, they changed her from this dragon lady businesswoman into this fairy princess, and they dyed her hair blonde, and they kind of hit on all these notes that are supposed to remind Ukrainians of their, like, ancient fables and tales and whatever. Anyway. And so, yeah, America on the side of, you know, certainly the corporatist right, and the corporatist right that has just seized power backed by Nazi mobs in the street. Neo-Nazi mobs in the street. And then, but to hear it on American TV, oh, this was just the people versus the dictatorship. And that was the thing. They quoted, that was another thing I saw on, I guess on CNN this morning or last night, about how, oh yeah, that guy Yushchenko, he ran a dictatorship. But then no mention of how it was that he took power. I mean, of course the guy's corrupt. Read Raimondo about, you know, their bandits being pushed out and replaced by our bandits. No question about his corruption. But they just ignore the fact. They don't want to lie to you too abruptly, so they just completely ignore the question of how it was that this man became the president of Ukraine in the first place. A popular election that was ratified and sanctified by all the international organizations as free and fair as can be, within the rules of the Constitution and everything else. Oh yeah, what a dictator. And of course, here's a guy who had been trying to offer, and finally then his offer was accepted to allow his opponents to basically take over the parliament. As soon as they did, they broke the deal, impeached him, and removed him from power. If you just heard the top of the hour news before the start of the show today, so, oh yeah, they reached a power-sharing agreement. That was where this show left off last Friday. Yeah, power-sharing agreement, which was not good enough by half for the opposition, which succeeded in turning right around and removing him from power. In fact, that was one of the Dick Durbin quotes last night, was about how, oh, you know, Yushchenko, I'm sure I'm saying his name wrong, but whatever. Yushchenko might even have been the other guy. Yakunovich or whatever, right? I don't know how to say other damn names, man. What's his name again? I got it right here. Yanukovych. Durbin was saying, yeah, well, listen, Yanukovych is nothing but a Russian puppet all along, which is why he's fled now to the Russian part of the country. Huh? The Russian part of the country? Oh, you mean half the country is pro-Russia. The half that won the election last time. That half. He's fled to which part of the country? And in fact, he ends up, because he realizes how crappy his throwaway line was, Dick Durbin, so he then tries to just elaborate and say, well, and you know, and then he probably will go to Russia too. Shut up. Who are these goons that run the American empire? They're really horrible. Well, lots of things, but liars is one of them. America on the side of the Nazis in Ukraine. Don't worry, Putin will win in the end. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager who provides his subscribers with a very real window into his investments, updating them on every move he makes in the markets. Right now, Mike's anticipating a bear and is dumping all the stocks while the getting is good, investing instead in gold and the commodities. Protect your assets and learn the wise ways of the markets. WallStreetWindow.com. And check out Mike Swanson's great contribution to the history of the rise of the American empire and the war state. Available at scotthorton.org/Amazon. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. This is Scott Horton Show. More about Ukraine and Venezuela and Palestine and Iran and a ton of more news coming up on the show. But first we go to Michael Meharry of the 10th Amendment Center and Nullify the NSA. Welcome back to the show, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing real good. Appreciate you joining us again today. And very happy, I think I will be very happy in just a moment to hear all the news. Update us on all the recent successes and benchmarks of progress being made by the Nullify NSA movement.
Man, we are rocking. It's pretty exciting. I think last time we had talked, I can't remember if the Utah bill had been...
I think it was just about to be introduced, and then in fact it was.
It has been. And, you know, the cool thing about it, that really grabs some media attention. You know, that's part of the game that we're playing here, is we really want to get some focus on this state-level effort. And we were fortunate enough to have The Guardian actually break the Utah bill, one of the guys that does a lot of their national security writing, and he wrote a really nice piece on the campaign and on the bill itself. And, you know, that kind of exposure, not only in the United States, but across the world, is very positive for the movement. And since then, we've got a bill that's been introduced in Alaska that deals with the data sharing aspect, you know, stopping the state and local law enforcement from using unconstitutionally gathered data in their criminal investigations. And
by the way, let me ask you about that real quick. I was talking with Cade Crockford, one Cade on Twitter. She's from the ACLU Massachusetts. And I brought that up about, I always forget the jargon that they use, but, you know, the laundering of this intelligence community data compiled on Americans, then through to the domestic police agencies, federal, state, and local, especially through the DEA, and then how they go back and kind of recreate a fake evidence trail of how they gained their probable cause in the first place to start their criminal investigation. Since they're banned by law, the domestic police, from fishing expeditions, they have to explain how they got onto the case, so they just make stuff up to cover up the fact that it's the NSA giving them the data. And she was saying, as worrying as that is, just think about the fact that in the 18,000 American police jurisdictions that there are, all the different local police, The real effect is going the other way, where it's true they're the closest to you to put their grubby mitts on you, but ultimately there are millions of them. And as they're compiling all this data, and as they're almost as lawless in the NSA and all they're spying on us, and then they're turning all that data over to the feds and giving it up through their, through the fusion centers and whatever other processes. And they're really beginning to integrate, even though not quite in name yet, they're really beginning to integrate all the local police into a national police force by way of the information sharing more than anything else.
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, that's why it's so important, you know, to kind of touch on another legislative issue. That's why it's so important for states to get their heads wrapped around these drone issues and get the use of drones circumscribed by warrants and whatnot. Because, you know, in most states right now, they can just fly these drones any old place. The DHS is funding drones at the state level, and that's exactly why the feds are doing it. They want the states to use these drones because it's an information-gathering way, and then they use the information sharing and get it, you know, send up the chain. So that's why these drone bills are so important. We're seeing a bunch of them in there, and they seem to be gaining a lot of momentum in legislatures that prescribe the use of drones and require warrants and at least put some type of constraints on their use. This kind of stuff is so important. And we're looking at some other aspects. We've seen a couple of bills introduced, one in Tennessee and one in another state that I can't remember off the top of my head, that would ban these quote-unquote voluntary police checkpoints that they're doing. You know, they're supposedly for studies, and basically they pull you over and they bribe you to give you your DNA or your blood sample so that they can, quote, study and see how many people are, you know, drinking and driving. And, of course, when a guy with a gun on his hip pulls you over, calling it voluntary is ridiculous in the first place. But so we're going to start looking at this and see if we can get this introduced to more states, because we've got to get a wall built back between these local and federal police agencies, because like you said, it's very dangerous.
And now, so as far as nullifying the NSA, obviously Utah is getting a lot of attention because that's where they have this new thing at Bluff Springs or whatever it's called, right? Bluffdale or whatever the hell.
Yeah, Bluffdale, the NSA. We call it the data center.
The data center. So this is a big deal. But now there are 50 states in the union, and I know they have a gigantic thing down in San Antonio, and God knows what they have in Texas, you know, here, there, the other place. But I guess we're up to, what, 10 different states now are at least considering some kind of legislation along these lines. But so what about all of them? What about, I'm just going to make up a state and pretend that I think that everybody knows there's nothing like this in Wyoming at all. Is it worth it for the Wyoming government to nullify too? What can they nullify about the NSA if there's not a data center there?
Absolutely. Actually, there's 16 states now. If you count the ones that are dealing with the data sharing, is actually we're up to 16. So that's pretty awesome.
That
is
great.
But that's a really good question. You know, a lot of people might say, and the perfect example was Arizona. Arizona was the first state. Senator Kelly Ward down there was the first person to say, "Hey, I'm going to run this bill," and they don't have any that we know of any NSA infrastructure in place in the state. So the question is asked, well, you know, why are you bothering with this? Well, first off, it deals with the data sharing that we've already talked about, and that's happening everywhere, all 50 states. So that's important. Secondly, you've got these affiliations with the various state universities, and that's in almost every state as well, where they have these, they call them Centers for Academic Excellence, which I think is very Orwellian sounding. And essentially, they're recruiting grounds. You know, you send a little junior off to college, and the NSA recruits them to spy on his parents, essentially. And then, of course, the research dollars that are used to develop the encryption-breaking programs and all of this kind of stuff. So this is going on in almost every state with the state universities. This Fourth Amendment Protection Act bans that. And then I think it's important, too, just to say, you know what, you're not welcome here. So when they do decide to move, and we know that they're dealing with capacity problems. You know, that's why they moved out of Maryland in the first place. They were running out of power grid. So as they try to expand, we don't know where they're going to expand next. It's better to have these bills in place in every state so that when the NSA comes a call and they know that they're not going to get any material support from that state. And that's exactly what Kelly Ward says. She says, we want the NSA to know that they're not coming south out of Utah down into Arizona. They're not welcome.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that attitude, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Pull the welcome mat out. That's what I say.
Mm-hmm. All right, and now, so out of 16 states, oh, I know what I was going to ask you. I read this thing in Ars Technica where they complain that, you know what, maybe this is overbroad. I think they quote the Utah Bill's language as saying, you know, no one may have any association whatsoever with this, that, the other. In other words, the way they say it, it even violates free speech, the free speech rights of government employees or civilians either, I guess, to even talk with the federal government about this. It's so broadly written. I wonder whether it would be better to say, you know, no corporation may enter into business negotiations with the government about this. The state government may not do this particular set of, you know, engage in this particular set of behaviors or contributions to the program, rather than making it so broad that it can be struck down.
Well, you know, I've heard this a little bit, and I haven't heard it from a lot of different places, but it seems like most of the people that talk about overbroad language have some other agenda, and I don't know what this particular article, where they're coming from exactly, but, you know, material support is something pretty specific, and talking with a federal agent is not providing material support. I mean, that's just, you know, that's kind of... it's kind of out there a little bit.
Well, I guess what they quote is the sample state level legislation reads, quote, "It is the policy of this state to refuse material support." Oh, see, it's not really making it a crime to do it. It's saying the policy of the state to refuse material support, participation, or assistance to any federal agency. And so they're saying, you know, that is really broad. That could even mean meeting with them for donuts to talk about what they could do to get the law repealed or something like that, you know?
Well, you know, and obviously an individual it doesn't bind every individual in the government. It binds the agencies and the state itself from providing material support. It doesn't, you know, keep anybody from the state from expressing their own opinion on things. And I think, you know, we've had a lot of different legal people look at this, and I think the legal language in it is pretty tight.
Okay, great. Well, I'm very happy to hear that. You might even contact this guy. It's Cyrus Farivar at Ars Technica. I think I said that wrong. This is where Ed Snowden used to hang out in the comments section here at Ars Technica.
Oh, cool. I'll check it out for sure.
You know, he seems like a fair-minded guy. Maybe, you know, he's worth contacting, and could be that he would like to add the context that you provide there, you know?
Definitely. And, you know, we've seen in several states, you know, and Arizona's the state that has kind of worked through the process the farthest. It's actually passed one committee vote already, and you know, I actually think it might have a hearing today. And so, you know, we're getting a sense, and we've made some language tweaks through the legislative process, and that's what the legislative process is for. You know, you see some things that might be weak in the language, especially in a specific state, and you can take some action to correct that. So, you know, there's definitely some things that can be tweaked in any bill, and so we're trying to walk the line between making sure that the bill does what it's supposed to do, and that's making it more difficult for the NSA to spy on everybody in the world, and making sure that the bill is fair and doesn't create other unforeseen consequences that we don't want to. But, you know, interestingly, the biggest pushback that we're seeing in Arizona is from law enforcement. You know, law enforcement doesn't like the idea of having any constraints on what data they can and can't use. So you're getting all these the Prosecutors Association in Arizona sent out. They basically said it could potentially shut down their operation. Like, okay, we can't use unconstitutional data anymore. Therefore, we'll never be able to prosecute a criminal again in Arizona. It's so ridiculous.
Right. Well, you know, I think this is going to be good for the cause because, first of all, the people are on our side, and so is the Bill of Rights and all of that. So it comes down to brass tacks. We have to win. This is our liberty at stake. But also, I think something that's working for our benefit here is that the idea of nullification and interposition from the states obstructing the federal government like this is so frightening to the people who have been depending on this trend of centralization and nationalization of everything for so long here. And their terror, and I use that term loosely, their overblown hysteria about this is going to help publicize it to the rest of the country they're going to end up siding with us. I think they already are siding with us. We'll be right back with Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center, offnow.org, right after this. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton, and I probably just got everybody in a bunch of trouble now. I use the T word. Well, I was just... I only meant, you know, Rachel Maddow and everyone who agrees with her, so 100 million panicking liberal Democrats and their besweated nightmare coming true, you know? Of decisions being made by people outside of Washington, D.C. I mean, there are a lot of liberals, and they've proven this. They would rather see us all enslaved by D.C. than able to protect our rights or limit the reach of the federal government over our lives by invoking state power. Just because they're so hell-bent, as we've seen in numerous articles in Salon and Alternet and whatever, that Somehow Michael Meharry, the day after he's done nullifying the National Security Agency, he's going to nullify the entire New Deal and whatever other, you know, liberal social programs, the abolition of Jim Crow, which was waged mostly at the, you know, at the federal level against the states, that all of that is going to all go away if people in Colorado can decide to legalize weed, if people in Montana can decide to legalize guns, if people in Utah can decide that they don't want to pay the water bill for the National Security Agency to spy on them all day. And you know, the Rachel Maddow, the MSNBC security mom, you know, demographic out there. That's all I was referring to as far as terror. And all I was really, I meant to just crack a joke about how ridiculous it is that anyone should be terrified about the American people doing whatever it takes, including terribly subversive things like going to their state legislatures in order to protect their rights. You know,
that's
as outlined
point.
Right there in the program in the first place, Amendment number 4, and each state constitution has one just like it. You know, they're breaking the deal. All we're trying to do is hold them to the deal. Isn't that right, Michael?
That's absolutely right. And that's, you know, you make a good point. It's not like this is a bunch of people marching in the streets throwing rocks or trying to burn down the NSA headquarters. I mean, this is working through legitimate political channels to enact change. And, you know, if the state of Utah doesn't want to have their resources and their money going to support an agency that's violating their rights, then they're going to get that pushed to their legislature, and it's a valid action of the people. And it's hard to wrap your head around why anybody would oppose that. But I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a certain segment of the population, and these people exist on both the left and the right, that really it's not about anything but creating more power for themselves so that they can push through their agenda. And I don't trust anybody from any point of view that wants to push their point of view by accumulating more power. And, you know, I've even seen that a little bit in some libertarian circles where they want to use centralized power to advance liberty, and I just can't wrap my head around that. I mean, you're the most free when you have the least power up above you. And so, you know, ultimately, I'd like to see no power above me at all. So let's decentralize it as much as possible.
Right. And now, by the way, I should really hasten to mention, since I come down on Maddow so hard, that over at Counterpunch, they had a great article defending the Nullify NSA movement and defending left-wing and liberal participation and alliance with libertarians on issues like this, and even good right-wingers on issues like this. Because after all, this is our liberty at stake here. And so it was sort of, it's good to see not just a liberal saying, you know, I'm not worried about that. I want to, you know, ally with these libertarians anyway, but seeing them kind of push back against that idea that somehow this ought to be verboten. That, I mean, think about that. Pretend to be a liberal for a minute. Really? The libertarians are your worse enemies than the conservatives are? That just can't be right. No matter how afraid of free markets you are, that just can't really be the position you're coming from. Not after the 21st century as we've lived it so far, you know? Come on.
No way. No way. And, you know, and the truth of the matter is we've got a lot of progressive support for the Nullify NSA movement. I mean, we've gotten the number of organizations and activists and people on the ground. You know, I was on a couple of conference calls last week with grassroots activists in both Maryland and Utah that are committed to working through this avenue, not just this year, but, you know, in the long term. And,
well, what
and
about conservatives, too? Do you have many conservatives who are kind of practicing what they preach about the Constitution, at least while Democrats are in power, or pretty much not?
Well, yeah, absolutely we do. I mean, you know, a lot of the sponsors of these bills are Republicans. So, you know, you kind of have it's kind of weird. It's like you have it's almost a reorganization of the political alliances that you're used to, and it's like you've got this block of liberty-minded, civil liberties-concerned people that are from the left and the right. You know, you've got your Justin Amash and those type of people, and then you've got your old-school civil liberty-minded progressives that have kind of come together. And then you've got what I call the establishment security state, you know, and that's your Peter Kings and your Feinsteins that, you know, they're more concerned about consolidating power and keeping things centralized.
But then the populists, right, they're pretty good, at least when liberals are in power. It does tend to be kind of a partisan thing. And in fact, I think probably right now, the stars are aligned pretty well, because if it was a Republican in power, the right would be completely silent about this other than calling for Snowden's head. And the left would be better, but the left tends to be pretty good on this stuff anyway, even with an Obama in there. Certainly the actual activists anyway, if not
the
mass of opinion on the left. And even the massive opinion on the left, I think, stays pretty good on this. And then you have the right, who they all like to pose as constitutionalists, at least when Democrats are in power. So if there's a time where the partisan stars are aligned, it may be right now. Especially a Democrat president, and you have almost all the states. It's almost a super majority of the states are controlled by Republican governors and legislatures at this point, almost, I think. That could be wrong, but it's at least a majority.
Yeah, and you're right. It's interesting to watch the dynamics play out. I'll tell you something funny. It kind of is along this line. There's one of the senators in Maryland, and I'm going to butcher her name, but that's okay because she doesn't really deserve to have her name pronounced properly. Senator Murkowski or Mikulski. She was interviewed by U.S. News about the Fourth Amendment Protection Act being introduced in Maryland, and she went absolutely apoplectic. I mean, she just freaked out. And the funniest thing was, is she started talking all Ronald Reagan. Okay, this is a liberal Democrat. She's talking all Ronald Reagan. How can the Republicans do this? How can they threaten our national security? Ronald Reagan brought down the Soviets in the Cold War, and it was really quite amusing. And I actually was able to contribute a quote to the story, and I said it was really weird for me to hear Democrats taking up for the Bush spy legacy. That kind of stuff is really weird to me. But you're right, the principled people on both the left and the right are lining up, and they're working hard to get this done. And I like seeing these new alliances because it breaks down the paradigms.
Yeah. And listen, I'm not one to push the myth that American democracy is great and works well and all these things. But on the other hand, trying is important. And you guys have proven already that it's worthwhile. I mean, like you talked about, just the attention and the discussion along these lines is extremely valuable going forward here. And, you know, one of the other things that Cade Crockford said on the show was that, remember, the COINTELPRO documents were liberated from that FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania back in 71. Well, the church committee and all the reforms and all that stuff that came out of it wasn't until 78. It took a long time of people rallying around those disclosures and then, you know, forcing further committee hearings and further investigations and further disclosures that ended up with the church committee reforms. Not that they were perfect or anything, but point being that we have a window of opportunity here. We really can make a difference if people try hard. You know, it's difficult to find ways to hold them accountable, but really, that's the genius of this thing, of the entire premise of the 10th Amendment Center, is to give people a way that they can participate, that they can actually really see the effect of their participation at the state and local level. I mean, in fact, the average guy probably knows somebody who knows somebody who knows a state senator, a state congressman that they could get a meeting with, especially if they can get 10 friends to call themselves the group of people who believe in this or that, and they want to go and have a meeting with these guys. And in fact, just calling them when they do stuff like introduce a bill like this and letting them hear rounds of applause and ovations and let them tell anecdotes to each other about how, yeah, people really liked that when I did that thing there and whatever. I mean, this can really, it can make a difference. And like I say in that spot, Edward Snowden has given us his chance. We have to take it. And I think the offnow.org nullify NSA movement is absolutely brilliant, and it's already working, and it can be much more effective. And now I say all that mostly to just give you a minute, not even half a minute, to tell us about how people can join up the 10th Amendment Center, how they can be members, how they can get this legislation out to their state reps, et cetera. Very quickly.
All right, two places you need to go. First, go to offnow.org, and that has all the information you need on this campaign to stop the NSA at the state level. Click the links. There's places to get involved. do that. Second thing you can do to help us out is go to 10thAmendmentCenter.com. It's all spelled out. And peruse our website. We've got all kinds of information on bills we're tracking, and you can become a member there. That will help us out. Make a donation. Volunteer to help. All the links are right there, 10thAmendmentCenter.com.
Man, you're doing good work there, Michael. I sure appreciate it.
I always appreciate coming on the show, man. I love it.
All right, y'all. That is Michael Meharry at the 10th Amendment Center, offnow.org. Offnow.org. Don't worry about things you can't control. Isn't that what they always say? But it's about impossible to avoid worrying about what's going on these days. The government has used the war on guns, the war on drugs, and the war on terrorism to tear our Bill of Rights to shreds. But you can fight back. The 10th Amendment Center has proven it, racking up major victories. For example, when the U.S. government claimed authority in the NDAA to have the military kidnap and detain Americans without trial, the nullifiers got a law passed in California, declaring the state's refusal to ever participate in any such thing. Their latest project is offnow.org, nullifying the National Security Agency. They've already gotten model legislation introduced in California, Arizona, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Kansas, meant to limit the power of the NSA to spy on Americans in those states. We'd be fools to wait around for the U.S. Congress or courts to roll back Big Brother. Our best chance is nullification and interposition on the state level. Go to offnow.org, print out that model legislation, and get to work nullifying the NSA. The hero Edward Snowden has risked everything to give us this chance. Let's take it. Offnow.org. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show, here on the Liberty Express, Daily Paul Radio, Anomaly Radio, ARS Radio, Radio. ScottHorton.org is my website. You can like me on Facebook, you can retweet me on Twitter, follow me there. You can subscribe on YouTube, /Scott Horton Show, for all those, /Scott Horton Show. That's how you get to that. Nice fade. What's up with this thing? My switch is wearing out. All right, anyway, yeah. So you can, yeah, retweet me for crying out loud. You know, if you want. Yeah, lots to talk about. And, you know, it's always the commercial break interrupting my talking while I'm talking. And, you know, what I was saying at the end of my Ukraine piece there before, I didn't really get a chance to explain what I meant. First of all, don't worry. I just meant sarcastically about the failure of the American Empire. Not like anybody here is necessarily rooting for Putin. That sounded really stupid. When I said, don't worry, Putin will win in the end, all I really meant was, America will fail in the end. They pulled off a coup d'etat back in 2004, too. Remember the whole scam with Yushchenko poisoning himself and claiming that the KGB did it, and then they had to threaten the Austrian doctor who proved that they were lying? Give me a break. And the Orange Revolution, how long did that last? Before Yushchenko then locked up Timoshenko. But then Timoshenko. And then how come? No, it was Yanukovych. Wait. Yushchenko locked her up, but then Yanukovych kept her locked up, right? Anyway. But the thing of it is that assuming the Americans back down before they push it all the way to war, my money's on KGB for they're going to get their guy in the end anyway. The real question is, as Jess Raimondo asks, why can't everybody just agree to let the country split? There never was a Poland. And as an independent, binational state, it's not working out very well. Let them split. I mean, for me, I'm a very multicultural sort of a person. And I think my libertarian ideology is compatible with all kinds. But the curse of the old world is ethnicity and borders. What are you going to do about it? That's where nations come from. And that's a lot of what they fight about, is who has the power as defined by their ancient differences, mostly. So, Ukraine used to be ruled partly by Poland and partly by the Russian czars. And then, you know, the modern-day borders were drawn by the Soviets. And in fact, I think you got a little bit of Stalinist population transfer, too, and making sure that the ethnic Russians have an even greater majority in parts in the East than they otherwise would have, etc. Not certain about that part. But anyway, as Justin Raimondo puts it in his article today at antiwar.com/Justin, I highly recommend you take a look at this piece. He does a good job in there. And he explains, hey, guess what? Look at the ethnic language split between East and West there, and then look at the election results split between East and West. And what you have is Orthodox Christian, ethnically Russian, Eastern part of the country, and then you have a Roman Catholic, Western-oriented, Ukrainian-speaking, I meant to say Russian-speaking in the East, Ukrainian-speaking in the West, and also you got a hell of a lot of hard feelings as all the neo-Nazis on the side of America, or America on the side of the neo-Nazis, and this one shows. This is part of what's called the Bloodlands. There's that new book, The Bloodlands, which I have but haven't read yet, about all the poor people who just happened to have been stuck between Hitler and Stalin during World War II. In fact, I think it maybe even talks about it in World War I as well. I'm not sure. Anthony Gregory read it. But anyway, so it sucks to be a Ukrainian during the time of Nazis and communists. Hard to survive. And anybody who fought against either side also at least de facto fought for either side. Kind of like the American-Russian proxy war there now, with America in the place of the Nazis. Only much more violent. But then again, these things could be worse. And you know, Robert Perry has a piece. I should talk with Eric about the Perry piece before we run it. Robert Perry has a piece that says this is more about the neocons than it's about Obama. And that really what's gone on is that Putin and Obama have been getting along on Iran and on Syria. Two very important things. Where the Russians are working with Obama, where he's actually, where he's been forced to do the right thing in backing down in Syria, and that is, you know, Putin gave him a way out with the chemical weapons deal last summer, which was very nice of him, thank you. And then also he's been very supportive with the whole P5+1, let's go ahead and get this nuclear deal with Iran thing worked out. And so from Robert Perry's point of view, this Victoria Nuland thing is sort of Bill Kristolian, neoconservative, separate government, Gestapo office within the government, to paraphrase Colin Powell talking about the neocons back in the Bush years. And that what they're doing is they're getting revenge on Putin in Ukraine for working with Obama. In other words, Perry paints them as kind of rogue, out of control under Obama. But it's his fault, of course, and Perry blames him for keeping Robert Gates, for keeping Hillary Clinton, or hiring her in the first place, for keeping Victoria Nuland, who used to work for Dick Cheney before she worked for Hillary Clinton, and who is the wife of Robert Kagan, Mr. Neocon, the alter ego of Bill Kristol, the guy that co-authored Toward a Neo-Reaganite Foreign Policy, the guy that wrote The World America Made and Owns and Must Full Spectrum Dominate Forever to End Evil, blah, blah. You know, the court intellectual frontman for the Richard Perls of the world. And she's the wife of that guy. One of the worst of the neocons. And anyway, so I'm not sure if I really see it exactly that way. I mean, after all, Obama did these things for what reason? Because he's weak and a coward, or because he really is personally that horrible himself, and that's what he thought he wanted to do? It's starting to become, on these foreign policy things, even though he does seem to have some good instincts at the beginning talking about peace in Palestine, and his instincts now, or I don't know, instincts, his political decision to pursue this nuclear deal with Iran right now. I mean, really, I heard Tom Woods, when he interviewed Anthony Gregory, he said if Scott Horton's right about Obama really pursuing a lasting peace with Iran here in the form of this nuclear deal, then that would be better than anything George Bush ever did. And I'm glad that Anthony Gregory went on to perfectly catalog the rest of Obama's foreign policy and the horrible sin that's the entire thing is just wanton murder for no good reason, and Anthony destroys him on it. But, you know, I think Tom's characterization of the greatness of the Iran deal, if it really can be done, what a wonderful thing that would be if Obama could actually do that, I don't think is overstated at all. I mean, I think that's a real thing. But it does go to show, right? It kind of casts a shadow on the rest of his policy. If he can see the importance of striking this nuclear deal with Iran, which he'd have to think it's really important to work as hard as he's done to face down the war party on this thing, then what about Afghanistan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Libya, Syria, where he butchers people all day long? What about that? Where's the sense in that? Who the hell is this guy anyway? Anyway, here he is messing around with, you know, Eric Margulies. You know, he's not much for hyperbole, I don't think. Eric Margulies is a pretty sober analyst of all this stuff, man. And he said, hey, look, this is kind of lining up like World War I, with a lot of bluffs to be called. A lot of people who'll be forced to back down in major circumstances in order to avoid war. Why set it up this way? Why all the tension with Russia? Because they dare to be independent from our empire? What difference does it really make if Ukraine is made whole, ruled by the West, by right-wing nationalists in the West, allied with the United States, against Russia? What benefit does that do to the empire at all, other than it gives Lockheed a minor client, a minor excuse to sell a few more planes to the U.S. to give them that they would have been able to get anyway? You know? I don't get it. I really don't. Maybe it's a small risk at this point, but it is a risk of a real war between the U.S. and Russia, a risk which should have been long a thing of the past. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org. All right, well, I'm an idiot. In the chat room, number six says, I said there never was a Poland, which I probably did say, but of course what I meant to say was there never was a Ukraine, an independent state of Ukraine. And I believe I followed myself up by saying it was half controlled by Poland, half by the Russian czars. So it probably sounded nonsensical when I said it wrong, because I said it wrong. But yeah, you know, Ukraine as an independent state has existed with borders drawn by the Soviets, but as an independent state since the end of the Soviet Union 25 years ago, and it's not really working out. Raimondo, in his article today at antiwar.com/Justin, which again is really good on this Ukraine thing, y'all, if you want to know what it's all about. But he says in there that, hey, look at the split of Czechoslovakia into Slovakia and the Czech Republic. That's fine. Right, they elected what's his name? He was a famous guy. I can't remember his name. He was the president there for a short time. Was it Vladislav Havel or something like that? They elected him for a short time, but he didn't really have the power to hold the country together. And they had new elections, and half the country elected this guy, and half the country elected that guy. And then Havel resigned, and so then that was it. I'm like, all right, well. Which side's going to attempt to force his will on the other half of the country? Just forget it. You know? And they'd been Czechoslovakia for a while under whichever different powers, but they'd been growing apart, actually, was the thing I read last night. And so, hey, what's so sacrosanct about all these empire, imperial-drawn borders anyway? As, again, Raimondo points out, ask the Americans what they think about the sanctity of the sovereign state of Serbia when it comes to splitting off Kosovo. Oh, all of a sudden secession and independence is perfectly great. How about down in South Sudan, where just last year they successfully finally, in a way, restarted a war? There had been a ceasefire for so long. Then they finally, succeeded in getting the South to secede completely from Sudan, at which point the two major factions in South Sudan went to war with each other, again along ethno-sectarian lines, which a war which I guess is still raging right now. And just look at what they did to Iraq, a de facto secession of the South. I mean, they fought and gave the South Baghdad, but then the South ran off with Baghdad, leaving the middle Sunni Arabs high and dry, while the Kurds move closer and closer. I mean, they already had autonomy, really, but they move closer and closer to declaring a sovereign state there in the north. And look at the so-called civil war in Syria, which amounts to a war for secession at this point. It's certainly not a war for Damascus by a long shot. I mean, the government in the Baathist government there isn't going anywhere, not at the hands of these rebels anyway. Secession? Why not? East-West, call it East-West, East Ukraine and West Ukraine, and let them have their different politicians. Who cares? What business is it of ours? That's what regular Americans have to ask themselves. Is it really our national interest to be messing around in Ukraine? If you don't know where Crimea is, if the word Crimea to you is the definition of so far away you have no idea where that is and can't possibly imagine how it could possibly be your business, then you're right. I mean, that's kind of the vision I have of Crimea, is from my feet planted on the ground way over here in central Texas. That's far away, man. The Crimean War, that's long ago and far away. Whoever is fighting over Crimea, don't let it be me. What the hell do you mean there are American battleships in the Black Sea right now? What? Man. Them Democrats, they're dangerous, dude. Dangerous. That's something, I guess, that Robert Perry left out. How did Victoria Nuland order the battleships into the Black Sea there? All right, well, anyway, I don't take Bob Perry that seriously anymore. Not on matters of what Democrats are doing. And again, yeah, neo-Nazis with proud SS lightning logos and iron crosses and swastikas and Hitler salutes. Read about it at Alternate today by our friend Max Blumenthal, who obviously already knows about these guys and their right-wing movements and their connections to American intelligence agencies, etc. And again, I mean, doesn't it sound like a threat to you if America's national security advisor says that it would be a grave mistake if Russia were to move troops into Ukraine to restore the government there? A grave mistake? As far as I know, the Russians have not directly answered that. Thank God, because the only answer to that is, oh yeah, what are you going to do about it? What are they going to do? Get down on their knees and kiss her shoes? That's Susan Rice. She's a real tough guy. Anyway, I already said this the other day, but I'll say it again. It used to be the line was West Germany. Now, the theory goes they're willing to get into a nuclear war over Eastern Europe. And I'm sorry for saying that if the Russians reinvade all of Eastern Europe, and for that matter, Western Europe, but especially if they, you know, reabsorb the old states into a new empire on, you know, the shape of the Soviet Union, that would be really sad. But no, I will not trade Houston and Austin and Dallas and San Antonio or even Amarillo for a single city over there. It's madness. And you can see the theory behind the madness. Hey, listen, if America is an ally with everyone and is bound to enter into a nuclear war against anyone who messes with anyone, then no one will ever try to do anything again. Because who would want to mess with us? All the H-bombs we got. it's an enforced peace on the whole planet, particularly between the major powers. But it's not sustainable. And it's really not for such, beneficent ends as enforcing world peace. That's just the excuse. But that's the theory of collective security, as opposed to, let's have an independent, neutral foreign policy like Switzerland, where they're just unilaterally at peace. They don't need a UN Security Council mandate to be at peace. They're just at peace. And instead of having a foreign policy like that, we use peace as our excuse to wage world war and to risk world war. And of course, I mean, look at this. Supporting a brown shirt coup d'etat against a democratically elected government. They supported, just like we talked about in Egypt, where they supported the military dictatorship overthrowing a democratically elected government there. Just like they supported the cancellation of the elections in the West Bank where Hamas won back in 2006. Just like they canceled the elections in Algeria back in 1993 when they elected Islamists. Elections are for people who mean to elect the people Americans want in power. That's it. That's what democracy means. That's what Dick Durbin means when he talks about embracing Western values. You must give them a chance to embrace Western values. You know, laying prone on your belly and doing what you're dictated to by what the Americans, you know, feel like at any given moment. May or may not coincide with what they want you to do here in a few. All right, enough. Let's talk about cops. So Robert Higgs was talking about how he's a little bit hopeful about the public waking up to the true nature of the state because of, and I'm roughly paraphrasing here, but he was saying... basically because of the Facebook feed. Because everybody has a camera, a high-quality camera, in their pocket. Everybody has a high-quality video camera in their pocket, and everybody has a Facebook feed. And what it's done, basically, and I'm mostly putting words in his mouth here, but his point was right. I'm not changing his point. I'm just saying it my way. That what it's done is it's made every local story of police abuse a national news story. And this is coinciding with a revolution in American policing where everyone is now treated like they're poor and black, as the state has treated the poor and black all along. And the cops are just completely unleashed now. There's virtually no accountability. I think a lot of it, most of it has to do with the police unions and all of that kind of thing, but also just the lawless character of our government in general. Where the pretense is kind of up, and they're basically, yeah, they're your local stormtroopers of death. And it used to be only, like, a metalhead would have called them that in reference to his favorite band. But now everybody can pretty much see that, yeah, man, you should have seen what they did to my neighbor the other day. It was freaking brutal. Thank God it wasn't me that they did it to. Hope I ain't next. Out of control. Local cops out of control all over the place. And what's happening, though, is it's sort of it's a very powerful meme, I guess, you know, like one of them cat pictures going around where just, you know, cops beat man to death for no reason. Here's another one. Cops shoot man to death for no reason. Cops gang up on this guy, step on his neck, suffocate him to death for no reason. Here, cops kill a dog for no reason. Cops completely out of control. And here the American people are the most brainwashed and propagandized people in the world, probably, believing more than any other population on earth probably believes that this state is for them, that these are your protectors. Call 911. They'll come and save you if there's a crisis. When in fact, they're the bad guys. It's like the blonde girl found out, and this is a world news because it was a little blonde girl, got tackled by the two big, fat, disgusting pigs of the APD for jaywalking, and she didn't hear their commands because she had her earbud in. So they hogtied her, basically, dragged her away, and she's screaming, quote, "I didn't do anything wrong." to which the whole world ought to be, you know, I think I heard them all clutching their gut and guffawing. Do anything wrong, what does that have to do with it? I mean, even though you are a blonde white girl, that still never had anything to do with it, really. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com. Oh, Naftali Bennett is on the BBC right now. Kill them all, I think he just said. Oh, well. All right, so now, oh, here was what was funny, too, about that, the girl. And I'm not saying it's funny what happened to her. I'm just saying it was funny, her naivete, that she thought that doing something wrong was the prerequisite for a cop messing with you. I mean, first of all, just listen to the official story. The official story is whether you break a law or commit an offense. That's the official story. None of that necessarily equates to doing anything wrong at all. And you'd be a damned fool to think that it does. Whoever thought that? That the law, that the penal code, that the rules and the regulations were about enforcing right as against wrong, rather than just what some scum was able to write into effect. Come on, we all already know better than that. The legislatures? Scum. All of them. Always have been. The judges? The most cruel people in our entire society. Who would think that the rules and the regulations, as enforced by these stormtroopers, have anything to do with fairness or justice or morality? Now, it could be that when she said, I wasn't doing anything wrong, she meant I wasn't doing anything wrong according to you guys or something, you know. I shouldn't exclude the possibility that she just kind of shorthanded it, as George Bush would say. Well, it's interesting that because she was a pretty blonde white UT student, it made national news, international news. The Daily Mail, if that counts, ran a piece about it. These lawless cops. I think probably they just like hearing her squeal. I think probably that's a lot of actually why it became such a viral thing. It's like, finally, this happens to a privileged little person, too, kind of attitude. Because this is how it's been for a lot of people for a long, long time. And it's not that she deserved it, but you know how people are kind of unfair like that. They sort of see it like that. And, you know, the police chief of Austin, who people are always crediting with being way better than all of the worst thugs before him somehow, he gave a press conference where he said, hey, listen, you know, in other police jurisdictions, the scandals are that the cops are out there sexually assaulting people on the job. In other words, she's lucky they didn't rape her, so shut up. Wow. And then today, Art Acevedo, his name is, Austin's police chief, he apologized for that because he didn't mean to imply that any cops ever sexually assaulted anyone. Oh, no, cops aren't out there raping prostitutes at gunpoint all day and all night in every major city in America. Give me a break. Nobody ever heard of that. Who ever heard of that? Who's a spokesman for those people? Nah, he's sorry. He didn't mean to imply that any cops are criminals anywhere in America. Ever. Of course they're not. But he didn't apologize for the part about how, yeah, your daughter's just lucky that my cops didn't rape her. Right? That's the police chief of Austin, Texas. Now, the district attorney of Travis County, where Austin, Texas is, she's a guilty felon. And not only is she guilty of drunk driving and all of that, but you can watch the video of her committing what would be all kinds of felonies if they were committed by a regular Austinite who was not the district attorney. What would be called resisting and obstruction and assaulting a police officer, blacked out drunk, tied up. If anyone ever deserved to be tied up in the restraint chair and the, Hannibal Lecter mask, the spit blocker mask, it was Travis County's district attorney. And yet she kept her job. So I'm sure Art Acevedo, who says that Austinites are lucky that the Austin police aren't simply just raping their daughters whenever they feel like it. You know, if they jaywalk or something. I'm sure he'll keep his position, too. That's the cops. That's how much they love you. Yeah, you're lucky we don't hold you down and rape you, says the local police chief. And will not have to resign any more than the DA had to resign. And seriously, man, you should look up. Just Google Travis County District Attorney, DWI, or whatever, and then but look it up in Google Video, you know, a video search, and watch this woman. And just imagine how many years in prison you'd be doing if you did what she did the night that she was arrested. You would be in prison right now. She is currently the district attorney of Travis County still. Amazing. That's what they call the rule of law. You know? In fact, that was the way I first learned about the law when I was a kid. Boss Hogg on the Dukes of Hazzard. I think it was every Thursday at 7. Could have been every Wednesday. And Boss Hogg would say things like, "I am the law!" And then that was the end of that. That's what the law was. Whatever the big fat guy in the white suit wants. Yeah, exactly. Everybody knows that. That's what the law is. What the government says. Oh, what the people with their hands on the reins of the government say. And the only time it ever applies to them is just when they carve an exception just so they can point at it to try to deny the rule. Never works, though. And, yeah, I really think it's the smartphone and the Facebook page is really making a change. And I don't know what it's really going to take, but I think more and more there's a consensus among the civilians of the United States that our police are just too militarized. It ain't just the NSA. It's the local SWAT teams out of control. In fact, somebody tweeted me a picture this morning of the police in Toledo, Ohio. They tweeted a picture of all of their soldiers, all their paramilitary soldiers in their Darth Vader gear with their masks and their German machine guns hanging onto the outside of their SWAT tank armored personnel carrier thing, acting all A-team sitcom thing going on. It was half a sitcom, the A-team, right? It was, I guess it was a, don't call it a drama, really, an action thriller thing. Anyway, these guys are a bunch of comedians, so they tweet, fun day Sunday. On their way to go raid somebody, first thing on a Sunday morning, this paramilitary special weapons assault team is going to invade someone's home. And for all we know, they killed somebody. For all we know, they killed somebody that they weren't looking for. In fact, I would assume that. In fact, I would say that, yeah, they did. They're guilty of that until they prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that they didn't. I mean, what else would do you think that special weapons assault team is doing kicking in somebody's door on a Sunday morning for? Who are they protecting with that and bragging about it? Oh, this is all just great. Like they're, you know, like they're Blackwater guys out on a lark in Iraq. In a lawless war zone where they can get their kicks victimizing innocent people and will never be held accountable, and they know it, and so they do whatever they want. Seems pretty obvious. Although, at least attitudes are changing. I don't know how long it's going to take before something really changes. But, at least attitudes are changing. All right. Now, I had one more thing. Oh, drug wars here, as long as we're talking about cops. So they busted Guzman, the drug dealer down there in Mexico. And I don't know everything about this, and I really should be a lot better on this. But it does bring up something that I do know, and that is that the Sinaloa cartel Yeah, this is the boss of the Sinaloa cartel. So this guy's been working for America for a long, long time. Here's just one example of this. Sinaloa cartel boss who supplied Chicago. I was a DEA snitch. Vicente Zambada Niebla, the son of one of Mexico's biggest drug kingpins, lived in the lap of luxury and had 24-hour armed security. This is at the Sun-Times. He oversaw the export of tons of narcotics into Chicago and other cities using trains, ships, Boeing 747 cargo jets, and even submarines. And he had a get-out-of-jail-free card, as it says here, working for the DEA. So let this be a lesson to you, especially if you're young people. You're not too sure what to make of this world that you live in and things like this. Here's one clue for you. The Democrats in power right now, they're drug pushers. These same people, the Department of Justice, which locks people up for using and trading in drug products, they're drug pushers. They're behind one of the biggest cartels in all of Mexico. All this is them stabbing their agent in the back. Now, I was very impressed as a young man when I realized just how much drugs were being sold by the Republicans in the Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush years. Wow, these same Republicans with their Just Say No campaign and their Let's Lock All Black People Who Would Dare to Use or Trade in Drugs in Prison for Daring to campaigns, and all their militarization of the cops and all their no-knock entries into everybody's house. And as bad as this was when I was a kid, these are the guys behind the supply? Of course they are. And that's not to say that they could eradicate the drug trade if they really tried, because they couldn't. But they don't have to be in on it with one cartel just to fight the other, but they are. And of course, they're each and every agent, just like you and just like people you know in your life, they're just individuals just like everybody else, and they all have their own reasons for doing what they do, like getting a promotion and making more money, on or off the table, above or under it. The entire drug war is evil and corrupt, and this guy, Guzman, is a government agent of the USA, and now he's going to court for doing what they had him do. And now, back in the 80s, Congress said, you may not butcher the El Salvadorans and Nicaraguans to death with machetes anymore, and you can't blow them up either, no more money for that. And so the CIA had to sell a bunch of cocaine in order to finance their secret, illegal, evil war against the women and children of El Salvador and Nicaragua. Not that they ever fought the communists, they just fought against women and children. They're hired machete-wielding terrorist butchers, that is. And so that makes sense. And you can see individual DEA and CIA agents and military guys wanting to make a lot of money, you know, on their end. But what explains the policy of the DEA and the CIA back in the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico against the Zetas? Other than just, I don't know, it's fun. They're trying to destroy your community. I don't know. Possibly. But anyway, the same guys arming them are the same guys protecting them in their drug use. And that's Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, and the president above him. Don't forget it. You know, for like 30 years from now, don't forget it. On March 7th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Council for the National Interest is co-hosting the first ever national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Confirmed speakers include Walt Scheuer, Giraldi, McGovern, Katowski, Porter, McConnell, Weiss, Raimondo, USS Liberty survivor Ernie Gallo, as well as co-sponsors Alison Ware of If Americans Knew and the great Grant Smith of the Institute for Research Middle East Policy. That's the national summit to reassess the U.S.-Israel special relationship. Friday, March the 7th, all day at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. NatSummit.org. All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. So I saw this article about, I guess in 2 days, something like that, it'll be the 20th anniversary of the death of Bill Hicks, the great comedian Bill Hicks. And so that means, I guess, in just a little while after that, it'll be the 20th anniversary of my first hearing about him, even though he's from Houston, spent a lot of his time in Austin. Lived there for a long time and did a lot of his best stuff in Austin. I was a lot younger. I don't know. I didn't know. After he died, very soon after he died, in fact, it may have been in a big rush of let's play a lot of Bill Hicks stuff on the Access Channel because he had died, I saw Sane Man. And, man, that's Bill Hicks at his best right there. It's really great. And you can find high-quality versions of it on the Pirate Bay and who knows where else. If you look on just, you know, Google News, or, I mean, Google Video, YouTube, something like that, you might find a lower quality version. But high-quality versions of Sane Man can be found. And that's from, July 1989. So it was already 5 years old at the time that I saw it. So it is a bit outdated, but it's okay as long as you know it's in the summer of 99 and you put it in the context of the time. There's so much brilliant stuff in there. And even though if you listen to Dangerous and Relentless and some of those albums, you realize how much of this stuff is recycled, the Sane Man performance is the absolute best version of all of that different stuff. If you ever hear his stuff any other place, any of that same material any other place, it's never as good as the Sane Man version. That's the best stuff as far as that goes. And then, and this is for people who don't really know about Bill Hicks, I'm trying to recommend. Rant in E minor. And Arizona Bay, for that matter, it's good. But Rant in E minor is really brilliant stuff. The very best of it. And I guess, so I just wanted to bring it up because the truth is, not that I'm funny, but Bill Hicks was a very big influence on me. I guess probably still is a very big influence on me now that I think about it. Not that I agree with him on everything or anything. He really helped shape the way I view things. And in fact, the way he put it a lot of times was he was always desperate to have someone ever, tell him that he was right. Nobody ever agreed with him about everything. Everything always seemed like such BS. And yet his own voice of reason was never confirmed. That was the way he put it. So he wanted to get up there and say, no, you're right. You're not crazy. They're the ones who are crazy, or at least they're dishonest and they're lying to you. And so it's the Sane Man who sees through this and sees it the radical way, because that's the truth, you know? And I was already like that in a major way, but that was what he did for me, was to confirm my belief, to let me know that I was really on the right track of, you know, being against everyone and everything, basically. And you know, he can seem at times like just some kind of cookie-cutter leftist or something like that. In the comments to this, they talk about how his view is very conventional now in a lot of ways or whatever. Well, it was way ahead of its time. Now maybe a lot of it is. But the truth is, he wasn't really a commie either. He condemned socialism in a lot of ways and had some points of view that you can definitely see were, you know, the products of his individual thinking, even though he was kind of cookie-cutter progressive in many ways. But in the best ways, you know, I guess. Anyway, he always did mean a lot to me, and, you know, like his stuff on Waco, where he just... It's funny because he starts out making fun of the Branch Davidians and their ridiculous beliefs about the end of the world and all of this stuff. And he lets the audience know, because it's soon after the thing. It's still when it's new and everybody's still inside of the government, really, and whatever. So he kind of really softens them up. And then he just lets them have it about the truth of that and how the government burned all those people to death and how they lied about it and on and on. And then he just breaks out and the audience just falls completely silent. And he says, they don't want the voice of reason spoken, folks, because otherwise we'd be free, and otherwise we wouldn't believe their horse. See, I didn't want to quote any of it or play any clips of it, because I don't want to censor them. But anyway, because otherwise we'd be free. If we have access to just honesty, then we wouldn't have to settle for what it is they're making us settle for, basically. And so I already agreed with that, but again, he is confirming my belief that it's worthwhile to pursue that as an end in itself. And so, even though I'm not funny, you know, I wonder sometimes if I was a drunk how funny I'd be. I bet I'd be a lot better. I bet I could have been a stand-up comedian. Probably more like Stanhope than Hicks, really, if I was a drunk. But unfortunately, I did not go that direction. I could have been funny if I was a drunk. But whatever. Anyway, so I also think... They quote Bill Hicks in here saying he likes his rock stars dead, and I think I do too, and I think that it's actually, you know, as sad as it is, in a way, I think it's probably best that he died when he died. Or I don't know, because I wonder about who he would have been if he lived through the whole Clinton years. Because he would have had all kinds of better reasons to hate the right and all the Gingrich contract with America, cultural conservative, this, that, the other thing. But man, he already hated Bill Clinton from the very beginning. And he hated the government. He hated cops and all that. He was left enough that he really hated the state. And I think he would have been a lot more libertarian by the end of the Clinton era. And then, you know, I don't know. But I think... at least for marking a very worthwhile point of view from that era, from the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s especially. And I know he'd been around for a while from the mid-80s on. There's a lot of good older material there too. But again, Sane Man is really worth your time, and Rant and E Minor as well. Those are my favorites. And anyway, so there's Bill Hicks. And in fact, I kind of blame him for my... kind of anti-business ethic. It's my anti-business ethic, but even though I'm a libertarian and I'm all about free association and markets, not capitalism and all that like Sheldon Richman, I still I have that whole if you're in marketing, kill yourself kind of attitude, which again I already had and he just helped confirm for me, and I just can't quite get over it. He charged people to get into his show. It's all right. You got to make money, right? I don't know. Anyway. Lots of good Bill Hicks stuff if you like funny stuff. And I went on too long about that, but I just want to mention it in case you don't know. I thought it was hilarious that Bush Jr. is saying that, yeah, he really likes hanging out with wounded veterans. Really? And what's the matter with you that you don't care enough about the wounded veterans? Are you kidding me? I don't know. I guess you have your own thing to say about that. I'll just shrug and leave it to you. George W. Bush, everybody. And then I got so many things on my list, I don't have time for them all. I only got a couple more minutes here, so let me see what all I'm going to talk about. First of all, Gareth Porter's going to be on the show tomorrow to talk about the Iran talks. Man, that's something I need to get to here. I'll go back to my notes here, man. Gareth Porter on tomorrow. U.S. adopts Israeli demand to bring Iran's missiles into the nuclear talks. Oh, man, would you... God dang it, Bobby. Freaking John Kerry. This is sabotage is what it is. If there's no nuclear weapons program, which there's not, but once it's double, extra, super, triple verified not to be, then who cares if they have an advanced space program with the ability to field three-stage rockets? The question is whether they're going to nuke anybody, right? So as long as the nuclear deal is a nuclear deal, who cares about the missiles? It's just sabotage. It's just an excuse to try to thwart the deal. Pisses me off. And then, check this out too, man. Goes hand in hand with this. And from the Telegraph, U.S. investigates illegal military equipment shipments from Israel to Iran. Pardon me? Jet fighter parts for their F-14s. Yeah, that's right. The Iranian Air Force, they don't fly MiGs. They fly F-14s. Because, you know, their government used to be run by a fascist dictatorship propped up by the United States of America, 53 through 79. And yet, America won't sell them the spare parts. Who's selling them the spare parts for their fighter jets? Benjamin Netanyahu. Oh, my God. You know the nerve of these guys. Now, here's my real point. See? Israel and Iran can be friends. You guys can sell missile and jet fighter parts back and forth with each other. The more everything you sell to each other, the better. I've always cited Ronald Reagan and, was it, Begin's support for selling tow missiles to Iran at the same time they were arming Saddam Hussein in the Iran-Iraq war. Not really, but just sort of in a tongue-in-cheek way to say, hey, listen, you could be selling them food or, you know, equipment for making food, for sowing and reaping food, or whatever. If you can sell them weapons, then you can be friends. And now, That's it, right? Shouldn't it be that the argument is won forever and that Benjamin Netanyahu and his government in Israel have to shut their stinking mouths about Iran's nuclear program for the rest of their sorry lives forever? You guys sell them jet fighter parts. So shut up about their nuke program, okay? Their civilian, verified, safeguarded nuclear electricity program. Shut up about it. Isn't that like one of the laws of the universe or something? Benjamin Netanyahu. Sometimes I think that this guy gets up in the morning just to annoy me. But then I remember that, no, it only seems like that. He annoys a lot of other people too. It just seems like he's like a fly while I'm eating a sandwich. Just get away from me with your nonsense. I can't stand you, Costanza. Kind of a thing. Selling F-14 replacement parts to Iran. The nerve of that guy. All right, anyway. And I guess I could be kind of tongue-in-cheek and make a big deal about Hagel saying he's going to downsize the military, but that's a ridiculous lie, and I don't believe it, and I wouldn't want to encourage you to believe it, so we'll throw that on the scrap pile till tomorrow. Al-Nusra versus ISIS, and more Syria news on the show tomorrow, too. Thanks for listening, y'all.